Since the start of the Trump administration, that is, Trump won, I've been looking for an answer about how to communicate with Trump supporters. How do you communicate facts? How do you get them to accept facts? Victor Shea and I used to host a podcast called iGen Politics, and we had on a lot of columnists and great thinkers asking for their thoughts. The best one I thought came from Nick Kristof, who said, try to get to one thing that you can agree on. You look at that and you try to find that one thing. And if you can agree on one, then maybe you can build on that. And I try that. It doesn't always work. And so I wanted to pursue more. And today, my friend Susan Berger has discovered someone who might be able to help us because she's actually a political psychiatrist. I didn't even know there was such a thing, but there is. So Susan, tell me how you found this wonderful person and tell us who she is.
Yeah. So I was very interested in it after the election. Things were so polarized and, you know, a lot of people were commenting that they were losing friends or family members or having lots of arguments and just not being able to deal with the difference in opinion. And then the night after the election, a very close friend of mine said to me that I was a poor loser, which really kind of threw me for a loop. And I went looking in my reporter's mode. I went looking for answers. Voila, I found Karen. And I thought, I didn't know, as Jill said, I didn't know there was such a thing as a political psychiatrist. So as way of introduction, let me just say that Karen, and Karen, make sure, correct me if I'm not right about any of this. She studied political psychology as a National Science Foundation graduate fellow at the University of Michigan, trained in psychiatry as a resident at UC San Francisco. And since the 2016 election, she's focused on how to communicate in the political realm, teaching activists how to depolarize conflicts and share their message in a way that can be heard by others. Also, she, and maybe you can talk about this a little bit, Karen, you had a very, what I would say, clever website on the New York Times called How to Talk to Your Crazy Uncle. And I think it was very well received, right? And people used it.
It was pretty popular. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did your business increase a lot right after 2016? Because I've heard from a lot of therapists that suddenly people were coming in with depression because of what had happened. Mm-hmm. And also because they were losing friends because they couldn't talk about facts. It's not opinions that differ. It's the facts that differ. Was that your experience?
Well, so you need to understand that at the time in 2016, I wasn't actually doing clinical work anymore. And so I was kind of in this liminal space where I was also in shock about the 2016 election and trying to figure out what was happening along with everybody else. So I was really in the middle of that mix, and a lot of my work grew out of my desire to try to make sense of what was happening in the country. And I even, you know, that piece in the New York Times in some ways grew out of my own experience, which is that I lived in Berkeley. Right. So there weren't any people I could talk to who disagreed with me. Everybody was on the same page. But I realized there were people on Facebook I could talk to, including family members, if I really wanted to understand why somebody would vote for Donald Trump. And so that's what I did. I reached out to my angry uncle. Somebody who, you know, listened to Rush Limbaugh, watched Fox News, who was really living in kind of a parallel universe from mine. And we started talking. And I'll tell you, in the beginning, it was incredibly difficult. I am no better naturally at this than anybody else. In fact, I might argue as someone who was a high school debater that I started out especially bad at it. But I learned very quickly that I couldn't bring those skills into the conversation. If I wanted that conversation to go somewhere, I really needed to listen. And by the time, you know, we had spent a few months conversing, I started to realize, you know, this is actually working. Like, it's not
what
just...
What were the specific things you were doing that were right. working? That's the important right. thing that I want it our is. Listeners. Remember, this is a show that's called Just the Facts. And the real problem here is that you're right. We live in alternate universes where mm-hmm. what I know to be the truth, what I know to be fact, and I delve into underlying documents. I don't just take someone else's opinion. I look for the evidence. And right. when I am talking to someone who's a MAGA believer, I'll give you a specific example. I have mm-hmm. a very, very, very long time friend, more than 50 years. And we had stopped talking politics because it was too difficult. And finally, at one point, we began and I said, "You don't really believe the election was stolen, do you?" And she said, "I absolutely do." And I said, "Well, I don't get to talk to people who feel that way, just like you said with, you know, you couldn't find people in Berkeley to talk to. And I would really appreciate it if you could share with me how you came to that conclusion. What are the facts you're relying on?" And she said, "Well, it's obvious. The Democrats had machines that were flipping votes. They had suitcases of ballots that they were stuffing." And I said, "Wait a minute. You do know that that was brought before many courts and it was thrown out every time because there's no evidence of that. You do know that people have had to pay, a station had to pay millions and millions of dollars because that's false." And she said, "Well, I don't believe any of that." And so then where are you? She does not believe what is clear, provable evidence that any jury in the country would accept. And so how do you carry on the conversation from that point?
Right.
And also, let me just add one thing. I mean, in our world of social media, everything is amplified. You know, mm-hmm. the lies aren't just a lie that's told here and there. It goes right. viral. And so how do you deal with that? Because we're not dealing with neutral ground here. We're dealing with right. like one side that believes stuff that's just, it's like even today in today's current with the shutdown mm-hmm. and they keep saying that the healthcare is going to be that illegal immigrants are going to get free healthcare. And it's been debunked so much. And everybody at the top, all the Republicans, the president, they're all, the Speaker of the House, they're all repeating it over and over again. So how do you combat that?
Right. So the first thing and the hardest thing to accept is that facts are the very last thing you talk about. Most people think if you don't agree on the facts, you can't have a conversation. And the reality is the exact opposite. You need to talk about everything else before you get to the facts.
What is everything else? What?
We'll get there.
Okay.
But if you don't have somebody's trust, they aren't going to listen to you when you start presenting facts. And the key thing to understand is that when we present facts, the reason we think they should be effective is because we think we're presenting them to an impartial judge, that we're presenting them like to someone in a courtroom, a jury that has been selected for their impartiality. But when we're talking to someone in a political conversation, they already are coming in with a bias. Very, very strong opinions. And human beings are conditioned and actually constructed to not be easily persuaded because it's not adaptive to change their beliefs willy-nilly. We need our beliefs to be fairly constant in order to function in the world. So that means you need a very discrete set of conditions for people to change. And the best way to think about this is height has a wonderful metaphor for how people think about moral dilemmas and about politics. And he says that the mind is really divided into two separate parts. And one is the rational part that you can think of as a rider on an elephant. And the other is an emotional part, which is like the elephant. And most of the time when we talk with people, we're trying to talk to the rider. The problem is that the rider doesn't really have control. The elephant is so big, so massive, that if the elephant, that emotional part of the brain, wants to go in one particular direction, nothing the rational mind tells it can make it change. So what that means is we need to talk to the emotional part of the brain, the elephant part of the brain, before trying to talk to the rational rider. So how do we do that? Yeah. The first thing you need to do is to make people feel safe enough to actually listen to you. Now, most of us go into a conversation on attack mode, right? We're like, no, that's wrong. That's not what the facts say. You've been listening to the wrong media. You don't, you know, you're confused, maybe crazy. And so, you know, I know better than you do. That immediately shuts people down. People don't want to be told what to think. People don't want to be judged. And so you need to go in a conversation first by letting people know, I am not going to think any worse of you because you see things differently. I also don't think you're stupid.
Might you like talk about, so I'm talking to my friend to say, you know, we've been really close friends. We've shared everything for 50 years. Let's just try and talk about this in a way that we can like hear each other. I mean, do you say that actually, or yeah. When you say to put them at ease, like talk about your grandchildren, talk about your dog, talk about the things that you have in common that's not political first? Is that
sometimes that can be really important. Remind both of you of all of the things that you do have in common, that you love about each other. That can really set the stage. But you have to be careful, because if you do that and then suddenly switch to politics in a way that signals, but I agree with you about this, it can kind of undo that.
So can you give us a specific example? Because I'm honestly not understanding how I would approach friends who do watch Fox and all those other sources.
Right. For sure. So, for example, something I might say is, hey, you know, I've noticed that you watch a lot of Fox News, and that's really different from me. I tend to watch CNN, and I think that you and I probably have some really different ideas about politics. And my guess is that sometimes in the past, when we've talked about this, you've felt really judged. Or maybe you've even felt judged by other people. What I want you to know is I would love to talk about this in a way that is respectful to both of us. So I don't want to, you know, I want to learn where you're coming from, but I don't want to tell you what to believe. Do you think we could have a conversation like that?
Well, could you, for example, I mean, all the stuff with RFK Jr. and mm-hmm. you know, getting rid of vaccines and all that is just so scary. And it's something so universal that most families are thinking about with their kids as measles is on the rise and everything.
Right.
Might you say to your friend, you know, I know you watch Fox News. but you got your kids vaccinated, didn't you? I mean, and aren't you happy that you did? And how would you feel about your newborn child going to kindergarten or your young child going to kindergarten with kids who are not vaccinated? I mean, is that a way to start the conversation or is that too confrontational?
It's confrontational. So one of the key things, words you had in there that I find often puts people on guard is but, right? So you started with a bridging statement, but then you kind of immediately undid it with the but. And so what I encourage people to do is more of a yes and. You know, one of the things I'm noticing is that there seems to be a certain tension for you. Like on the one hand, you seem to really like Fox News, but on the other hand, you're also doing some things that aren't consistent with Fox News. Like you're getting your child vaccinated. So that confuses me a little bit. Can you walk me through your thinking about that?
Interesting. It's a better way to do it so that they're more inclined to actually give their answer than to feel threatened, right?
One of the things you said is that it's not, and this goes back to your debate and why your experience doesn't really help, is that this is not about winning the argument. Because if that's your goal is to just like, I'm right and you're wrong, that doesn't work. But I'm still not sure how you get to either. I mean, opinions, of course, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts. So I'm still obsessed with how how can you get someone to admit that maybe when Donald Trump says Portland is a war zone, Chicago is dangerous and we have to send in the troops, that I'm here in Chicago. I have a dear friend in Portland and I'm following it very closely. And I know those are just not, it's not true. How do you deal with that? I know there were no suitcases. I know machines didn't flip votes, that Dominion collected a lot of money and Smartmatic collected a lot of money because Fox lied. And they had to pay for that. And they knew they were lying. So how do you deal with those realities?
Yeah. So once you get to a place where you've really earned the other person's trust, and that involves not just making them feel safe, but also getting to a place where you really understand where they're coming from and you've proven that. Then you move on to a more collaborative phase where facts can become relevant and important in the conversation. So the simplest way to share facts is actually through personal stories. And personal stories are powerful because they can't really be questioned. If I tell you something about what happened to me or what happened to a good friend of mine, they're very unlikely to say, oh, you're lying and making this up. So that has a lot of credibility attached to it. But let's say I want to present a fact that is specific to something like voting machines. How might I do that? So one way to do it would be if they were to say to me, well, the evidence shows that these voting machines were rigged. Rather than saying no, what I could say is, you know, that isn't consistent with what I've heard. But you know what? I'm willing to look into this with you and see what we can find out. So are you okay with me doing a little research?
And
checking into it and seeing what I can find. You can even go a step further and say, you know, what kind of sources would you trust on this? Like, you know, if it was like testimony in court or like, you can go a little bit of a ways. But the research on this is actually really good, that this is one of the most effective way effective ways to get people to listen to facts. If they feel like it's a collaborative endeavor, rather than you telling them something, they're much more likely to hear it. Also, if you just hand them something without asking, you know, oh, read this article. This is going to show you what the reality is. Uh-huh. They won't read it. They don't care. They don't trust you. It's a burden on them. But if you ask, it changes the whole dynamic.
That is such great advice.
That is great.
I love that approach. I think that actually could work. And then you get them to try to find facts, and you can find facts, and then you can discuss it in a nice, civil, collaborative way. So good. It's, you know, and as Susan said, though, we're in a very different environment. I mean, I of course, saw what happened in Watergate. I lived it. I experienced it. But that was a time when there were three networks. They all had the same facts. And they might have different policy implications on different channels, but they didn't debate facts. And now we have so many alternative sources, social media and cable news, and everything's getting amplified and everyone is living in a silo. So it makes it harder. And the other thing that's happening, I think, that I want to ask about is people are not just in silos, but people are now tuning out. Even my most activist friends are getting overwhelmed by the constant deluge of attempts to take down our democracy, is how I would phrase it. Not if I was talking to a MAGA person, but they are tuning out. They and you're a psychiatrist. What would you tell those people about how they can stay involved enough to be active, to take the actions they need to take, and yet keep sane, be able to sleep at night? I'm having nightmares, and I don't know how to overcome it. I use some meditation devices. Calm is a thing that I use, but it doesn't work all that well. So what's your advice on staying involved and knowledgeable, but not depressed?
Yeah, there are a couple of really important things around this. And I talk to people about this all the time. One is you need to create a sustainable environment and a sustaining environment. So a lot of people are flooded by media that is overwhelmingly negative. I advise people to restrict their media to only what they absolutely need in order to be an effective activist. So, for example, you don't need to read every horrible thing that Trump has done. You don't need to be up to date on every terrible action he takes, because at this point, We know what he's doing is awful. And the marginal benefit of each piece of information isn't all that useful. So keep informed, at the bare minimum you need to do your work. So you don't get drained.
Karen, I'm wondering too, like, at what point do you give up with a friend? I mean, at what point do you say, okay, we just cannot talk politics anymore. And yet, you know, this person is intelligent and, you know, your views are just so different that it's really hard to be in the same room. At what point do you like throw up your hand? You know, you must know as a therapist, you know, particularly with girlfriends when they often break up over the years, and it can be as devastating as a divorce. And then now, but now add the politics to it. Is this like much worse?
So there are actually two kinds of relationships that are problematic right now. One is the friend who agrees with you on politics, but is in a constant state of stress, right? So emotions are contagious. And if every time you're with this person, they're kind of flooding you with their stress about politics, that can be problematic.
Right.
You need somebody who has their own emotions under control and isn't draining you, and is forward oriented, right? So there are people who you spend time with who are constantly talking about everything that's horrible, but aren't in a mode of thinking about solutions or taking actions around solutions. And in those cases, sometimes you do need to cut back.
Right. I mean, I know people who have said flat out, I can't talk about this anymore for my own mental health.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to leave our conversations to grandchildren and puppies and cooking and, you know, movies.
Right.
Right.
Right. And let's come back to that in a minute, because I also want to say something about the people who, you know, the people who are very MAGA and who you find to be just incredibly difficult to have in your life. And what you know, it's important to, I'm very much not in favor of cutting those people out. If you possibly can avoid it, because you may very well be their last connection to reality. And once you sever that connection, it's not only that they stay where they are, but they're more likely to drift further right. And that's a problem. So you're their chance to come back. That said, do you have an obligation to be with them all the time? Absolutely not. You can set really firm boundaries around your conversations so that you're there, you're having the conversations you feel like you can tolerate, and you're planting seeds, but you're not the only person in this person's life who's hopefully working toward this goal.
Can I ask you a question about something you said that I've been mulling in my mind and I'm a little troubled by, which is this, you know, sometimes you have to really tune out and just shut out. And the thing that I worry about is I'm seeing, obviously, because it is my job to stay informed, I can't tune out. But I feel that the flood of daily bad news, let's call it that, or of bad actions is overwhelming to everybody, not just to me, but to anyone who listens to even a fraction of it. But if you tune out, you become numb and you accept it as, well, that's just the way it is. And there's nothing I can do about it. And if you know any history,
scary.
That's what happened in Germany. It was one little thing at a time. It wasn't that Hitler came in and just changed everything overnight, although 8 months, which is all we've had so far, is pretty fast. Probably faster than anything Hitler did. And I think we have to know what's going on so that we can, let me divert a little, because one piece of advice that I heard that was really good is you don't have to know everything about everything. Learn one thing really well so that you can really take on and argue very effectively on that one thing. If immigration is your thing, you should see the pictures of helicopters overhead and troopers rappelling out of helicopters. I'm sorry, I'm going to criticize the media here because I haven't seen photographs of all the destroyed apartments. And I haven't seen photographs of all the people zip-tied and the children crying in the middle of the night. I want to see those pictures because that's how you really know what happened. But I think it's important, whether it's on one topic or five topics or however many, you can digest and feel like you can make the argument for why it's hurting America to have tariffs, why it's hurting America to have the National Guard violating posse comitatus and taking law enforcement activity. So I don't want people tuning out. I want them to at least take on one or two subjects so that they can take action and be involved. And even if it's only participating on October 18th, you know, first of all, it's very life affirming to be surrounded by people who feel the way you do. And second of all, it is the best way to send a huge message is to have twice as many people as were at the last march, is to have people who are saying, I'm not taking this. And obviously, I'm hoping Republicans and independents will join because it's what it's going to take to stop our slide into dictatorship. So I just want to challenge you on the idea of tuning out.
Yeah.
No, to be absolutely clear, when I say be careful about how much media you're taking in, it doesn't mean stop taking in media. It just means don't take in so much that you're going to burn out or worse, that it's going to possibly worse, that it's going to take away time from actual activism. Yeah. I know a lot of people who are totally up on what's happening, who spend hours upon hours a day who watching MSNBC News and read every newspaper, but aren't actually doing anything. Yeah. So they're in a constant state of agitation and stress and fear, but they're paralyzed by the incoming information.
Okay.
So instead, limit what you're taking in so that you can be effective.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, go ahead. You have like one like piece of advice for most people, like a good place to get started with a friend that's been had this problem. Like, is there an icebreaker? Is there like a certain, what do you recommend? And I know we should probably point people to your website too.
Sure. Just to be clear, to a good place to start with someone who disagrees with you, or a good place to start with someone who's kind of checked out?
Either or, yeah.
Both. Both.
We're all dealing with both, I think.
Yeah. So for the person who disagrees with you, a lot of times where you need to start is with mending the relationship, right? So a lot of times the past damage has been done, particularly in families and friendships. So just apologizing and saying, hey, I know I haven't handled these conversations necessarily as well as I could have in the past.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for that. I'm really working on it. And I want you to know that even though you and I totally disagree on this, my feelings about you are never going to change. You're still my mom. You're still my brother. I love you. And use that as the jumping off point.
It's good.
Because you can't just leap over that trauma and try to then go into a persuasive conversation. It's not going to work.
What about the people who have tuned out? My husband, for example, just cannot tolerate it. And I sometimes really want to vent and I want to talk to him. And he's like, don't talk to me. So is there hope for that?
Yeah. I think the first place to start is actually with empathy. Because what stops us first is our frustration, right? We're like, how can you not be doing something about this? How can you not be like as agitated as I am?
He is as agitated as I am.
Well,
that's where he's like,
So start from a place of empathy and, offer maybe, you know, I know you and I feel the same way about this, but where our responses are different. We cope with our anxiety around this in different ways. And my way is to take action, and your way is to kind of withdraw a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you're feeling and going through so that I can understand it a little better? And once you do that, he's going to hear that you can actually relate to what he's going through. And it's going to create space for both of you to maybe collaborate on a way to move forward. So instead of it being like you have your form of activism, he has his, you know, maybe there's something the two of you can do together that is more productive for both of you. And one of the things that's really interesting in the research on political activism is that people who kind of check out often want to get involved or would get involved if it's almost like they have an activation energy barrier. They need help getting over it. And what they need are other people, not to like berate them and say, you need to do this or drag them, but to collaborate with them. So, you know, what do you think would be a comfortable form of involvement for you? And maybe we could do that together.
Well, I want to clarify, he is very involved and active. It's just that he doesn't want to listen to the news in the depth that I want to listen to the news. And when I'm reading something, I go, oh my God, you won't believe. And he says, I don't want to know. He reads two newspapers every day. And so he does get the headlines. It's the, you know, 24-hour news cycle that he doesn't want to engage in. And right. I get that. I mean, I really do get that. I don't have any friends who are not up on the facts and usually in the same way that I am, which is 24-hour news cycle. Those are because the people that I would be friends with, of course, share those views. With a few exceptions of people who are MAGA people, who I try to focus on the things we share in common, our outside interests other than politics, because I'm going to try your suggestion of collaboration. Yeah. And I think that would work because my friends are smart. And if we can present to each other information and work to come to an understanding, I think that will work. I really do. So that's great advice. I value that. You know, we all have to check out Snoops occasionally because we'll read something that we accept is absolutely true. The thing that's been going around now, the NFL is going to do a memorial during the Super Bowl for Charlie Kirk. I don't think that's actually true. But if you look at social media, it's all over social media.
Really?
But if you try to verify it, and I just wrote to a friend who does sexual assault training for the NFL, and she doesn't know that's happening. And so yes. I'm not sure.
Snopes.com is great. It's a great way to verify if it's for real or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we make mistakes on the left too. Absolutely. Oh,
of course. Absolutely. I mean, the left has been outraged about why would you honor this person? And it does seem completely weird. It just doesn't seem in keeping with the Super Bowl. But It also turns out that despite it being all over social media, and we've all fallen for this, where you'll say, read something, and you'll go, oh, this is so good. And then you have to step back and say, it's too good to be true. Better check it out. And almost every time I get that feeling, I learn that it is absolutely not true, that it just isn't true. So I think, again, I think facts really matter, but you've shown us the way to communicate so that the other side will listen and maybe even hear, because it's not enough to listen. You have to actually hear what the other side is saying. And I think you've given us some very good advice today, for which I am very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure, everybody. We want you to look at her website and to stay tuned to Communicating Facts so that you can make a difference and have the courage to stay involved, because we all need my hashtag sister-in-law, Joyce Vance's book is You Can Never Give Up, is coming out October 21st, right after No King's Day. And it makes the point about why we have to continue this fight. It is the only way we will stop the slide into dictatorship, authoritarianism, despotism, whatever word makes you feel the fear is the word I want you to focus on. And thank you for listening to Just the Facts.